You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to the podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at our P.O. Box, P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for November 9th, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside Ann Romney's servant slapping gauntlet, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
The Heritage Foundation should buy Ann Romney a relaxation gift basket.
Yeah, they really should. They really should.
It's just like the one that NATO buys for Angela Merkel.
Uh-huh.
It's got chai tea, lavender bath salts, uh-huh, tub of ready-to-eat cheesecake filling. And then they, of course, for Anne, they have to include a DVD copy of Obama 2016. So,
and and don't forget, you should also include, as a special package from Sheldon Adelson, Karl Rove's ear.
Just gift wrap.
Yeah, in $100 bills. Here, honey. This is just for you.
Just for you, Anne.
Carl? Oh, won't see him no
won't
more.
Won't see him no more.
Yeah.
Oh, he's desperately trying to save his life. He's got the horse head in his bed already. He does.
Well, hey. I'm actually of two minds about that.
Yeah?
Because part of me says you just don't blow hundreds of millions of dollars of sleazy casino mogul money and walk away from it, having made all kinds of lavish promises. If mobster movies have taught me anything, Luke Al, it's that they really don't take kindly to having their money that they have spent to bribe politicians and rig the process burned like a pile of leaves. They don't really take kindly to that. But my other part of me also says this is the Republican Party. And when you're in the brain cast, when you're at the top tier of their management, as we know from Iraq and Afghanistan and 9/11 and Katrina and pretty much everything else, it doesn't matter how badly you fuck up.
Well, and I was going to say, when you talked about wasting casino money, Newt Gingrich has been doing that for decades.
Sheldon Adelson.
So
all of his shell corporations that he uses to bilk rednecks out of their money and convince them that he's, you know, a genius are all fronted with millions and millions and millions of dollars by Shelley Adelson and have been for years. And they haven't fired him yet because, you know, first of all,
they're still playing a long game, Driftglass.
Yeah. Yes, they are.
We listened to, and I do recommend highly, Fresh Air this week.
Yeah.
Had on Norm Ornstein.
Yes, yes.
And he was talking about, hey, you know what? They don't care because the Senate and the presidency, well, okay, they lost those, but
doesn't matter.
State House races and gerrymandering, and they're just going to go on, and school boards and they're building from the bottom up for decades, and they don't care.
And why don't you give people a little background on who Norm Ornstein and Thomas Mann, I think. Thomas.
Well, they wrote a book this year called It's Even Worse Than It Looks. And it directly blames the Republican Party for their obstruction, for the state of the political process, the polarization, that the polarization is really all on one side.
And these guys wrote this last year.
Mm-hmm.
And these are two very, very moderate,
bipartisan, nonpartisan
for decades
analysts. And they're not crazy, right?
No, boring
as hell. They're not bloggers. You know, Norm Ornstein works for the Conservative American Enterprise Institute.
Yeah, and
he's just a historical observer. Knows a lot about the history of politics.
And what he's doing,
and of course, they were promptly. Blacklisted from the Sunday shows. I mean, they were not allowed on.
And that's the point. They're sort of what to history what Nate Silver is to math.
Exactly.
Which is, look, this is just facts. It's simply factually true that, and this is the cool thing about the Fresh Air program was it was a long form. They talked to him for an hour.
For an hour,
And he said, look, all of this modern stuff is traceable back to Newt Gingrich in the
1978. From 1978 on, he took 16 years to build this party
and
to hate liberals.
And he built an entire vocabulary that he taught everyone to use, extreme vitriolic, vicious attack.
Norm Ornstein doesn't talk about that. You talk about that.
No, he did talk about that. I haven't listened to the rest. The divisiveness of the modern political dialogue is all directly traceable to Newt fucking Gingrich, who is on every Sunday show every week. You know who's not on any Sunday show ever? Norm Ornstein.
Yeah.
You know why? Because Norm Ornstein, and most interestingly, the only place these guys who had any play for their really, really good article, which basically promotes their book and their book, was on the Daily Beast and on Chris Hayes' show.
Yep.
They were completely blackballed from going on any other show, very much like Iraq war critics were blackballed from going on any show at all while Iraq was unraveling. The shows were full of people talking about how liberals are traitors and liberals are liars, and anybody who talked factually about what was going on was immediately labeled a fifth columnist. Hello, Andrew Sullivan, I'm talking to you. A fifth columnist hater, and was blackballed. And it turns out, of course, 3, 4, 5 years later, they were all right. The people on the Sunday shows were all wrong. So it was fascinating to me that this guy only got an hour of airtime after the election.
Hey, Driftglass?
Yeah.
Was there a party this week that we missed somehow?
Apparently so.
You know, I do want to say we are celebrating this election. And
yeah, modestly.
But the fact is, I particularly want to thank a guy named Jerome on Twitter for reminding me of what I said after the 2010 election, which is, you know, before elections, chop wood, carry water. After elections, chop wood, carry water. And that's what we do. And I apologize to our listeners who want us to have celebration music and streamers and so forth. We do have those things. And in particular, Batocchio wrote me this week because last weekend was my 8-year blogiversary.
And you almost, you know, ran right past it.
I did. Well, it's election day. So it's, you know, it was November 4th in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I was busy. But Batocchio said, "Hey, BG, we all chipped in and got you a few things for your blogiversary. Gay marriage, legal pot, Elizabeth Warren, and a reelected black president.
Yeah.
Also, Karl Rove and many wingnuts crying."
Yeah.
And I'm responding to him with, you know, "Hey, a little red wine, some Grand Marnier, a shot of bitters, and ice cubes made from the tears of Tea Party Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
I dare Peggy Noonan to come up with a better cocktail."
The provisional name for it is called Dashed Hopes. But
Dashed Hopes.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's not really good. It's got
to
be
I want you to tell everyone about your experience voting because it was so funny.
Oh, I had on election day, it was a remarkably religion-infused day.
Yeah.
For lots of reasons that I won't go into. Suffice it to say, every joke about a priest, a rabbi, and Driftglass going to a bar were all true. They all, in the aggregate, it was entirely true that
day.
It's true.
You really did have a lot of interfaith interaction that day.
I did. I spent more time
starting with voting in a church.
I did.
Where were you voting in a church? Basement.
And I was voter number 666.
Yeah.
Really, truly.
Truly. And I was it's funny because I was voter number 661, and I looked down and saw when I put my ballot in the tally box that it went 661. I said, oh, I have to manipulate this. I have to put Driftglass in line so that he's 666. And then it turned out I didn't have to do anything because when he was done, he walked over and I didn't even have to move him in line.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my gosh.
Well, honey, you have to remember
destiny.
I'm protected on high by the Prince of Darkness. So
there you go.
Oh, Black Hitler. Yeah.
I picked up our 10-year-old. I've mentioned this on Facebook. I picked up our 10-year-old from school, and they had classroom elections. All three kids had classroom elections on election day. And our 10-year-old voted for Romney because she felt sorry for him.
Yeah.
She said, well, he was only getting 2 votes.
I know.
And everybody else was voting for Obama, so I made 3 votes for Romney, and there were 18 votes for Obama, so I felt sorry.
So
he was not getting enough votes.
For all of you Simpsons fans out there, this was Lisa Simpson taking pity on Ralph Wiggum and giving him a Valentine, saying, "I choose you," and that's because she has a very kind heart.
Yeah, it is true. She really does. And she also thought that it would be funnier if Romney won. She told me, And there are people who say, yeah, this would be great for comedy. Uh-huh. But I'm glad it turned out the way it did.
Yeah, I am too.
We're still upset about we lost our house race, apparently. I don't know whether it's still in contention or not. There was some talk of that. But essentially, Rodney Davis came in with a lot of outside money and a lot of lies and promised to repeal Obamacare.
Yeah, so good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck. We're really looking forward to chronicling Rodney Davis's attempts to repeal Obamacare at this point.
Well, I'm looking forward to his first town hall meeting.
He won't have any.
No, he won't. No.
And the thing is, our former Congressman Shimkus, who reads the Bible, the rainbow chapters of the Bible at global warming congressional hearings,
where Jesus talks about coal.
Right. He's Mr. Cole. He was redistricted and won his reelection, I believe in the 13th district. But they kind of moved him west, and to more farm country, and set up this district was winnable according to the way it was drawn by Democrats. But sometimes you cannot beat the money wall, and the ads were full of lies. I have never seen ads that pertained to me that were so false.
Yeah.
Now he's my congressman, and he worked the way he got to be the nominee, he worked for Shimkus for 15 years. So this is more of the same. And Shimkus knew not to have he doesn't have town hall meetings. He has help desks where he has 22-year-old interns sit at a desk and help people with their, disability.
Yeah, Social Security, which is Social constituent Security service.
Disability. Yep.
Which if you
everybody
want to
has
stay in
to
office,
do that. Everybody has to do that. That's not a big deal. But there's no reaching out to people who disagree with you at all, or providing any. And I get that. That's politically smart to not be in a room with your enemies with a bunch of iPhone cameras running.
Yeah.
But he is going to represent Cole and not represent me. And that's,
I'm not saying
he's not my congressman, because I don't believe that. I think we have to work with the people we have, and we'll see how things turn out. But I'm not proud that he's my congressman. I will say that.
You're ashamed of America, aren't you, Blue Gal?
I'm not apologizing.
You're apologizing
for America.
We don't have the money to travel around the world to apologize for America. We have to stick to the central Illinois area.
We have to talk about why Romney lost a little bit.
Yeah.
There were a couple of stories that came out that were just amazing to me.
Well, and I think I'd like to just start that conversation, because there's a lot of post-election stuff that's kind of getting churned up out of the American subconscious.
Right.
And we're going to talk about it for the next several weeks, I'm sure. It'll inform everything we talk about. But it's really clear to me now that we are two separate countries.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Completely separate and distinct from each other. And one of those two countries is fucking crazy.
Yep.
And every time.
As I said on Twitter, if you remove the Confederacy from Romney's win, there's nothing there. I mean, there's the Plains states. But in terms of population and the popular vote, there's nothing there for Romney.
Yeah. And this is now the party. I mean, the Republican Party has a lot of funny names. We call it a lot of things. The Party of Lincoln is now the Party of Jefferson Davis and the Know-Nothings. But really, the Republican Party is consistently now the party of always wrong but never in doubt.
Right.
And they their entire internal, emotional, psychological, financial, theological mechanism is now turned to the task of keeping reality at bay.
And that is what destroyed the Romney campaign in a very technical way.
Yeah. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. Well, CBS News had the story that lots of people have been retweeting and talking about called Romney Shell-Shocked by Loss. And this made both of us laugh so hard that they mentioned several things that indicate why Romney lost. But the one that we loved was... State poll. I'm quoting from the article.
Yeah,
This is so classic. State polls showed Romney winning big among independents.
Pause for a laugh. Okay.
I'm an independent. Now, listeners of this podcast know who those guys are, right?
Yep. Yep.
Historically, any candidate polling that well among independents wins.
Wait for it.
But as it turned out, many of those independents were former Republicans.
Yeah, golly, no one could have predicted that. Who now, as the article says, yeah, self-identify as independent.
I'm an independent.
Yeah. Now that I burned my uniform, pretend I was never in Germany during World War II, I'm from Switzerland.
I never voted. Yeah. And any liberal and anyone with a brain who didn't want to believe that independents were voting for Romney, yeah, and wanted the truth could have asked in those polls one more question.
Yep.
Did you vote for Al Gore?
Yes. Yeah.
That's all you had to say. You didn't.
Or John Kerry.
Or John Kerry.
Yeah.
And they would balk and say, you know, and make some reference to that being a choice for homosexuals.
Yeah.
And you'd know that they were a former, that they were a Bush voter. You'd know.
Also
that.
Known as Tea Parties, because as we say every time or almost every week, Blue Gal, there is no Tea Party.
But Drift Class, to my mind, the fact that there is no Tea Party is actually a golden opportunity for Obama.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He can attack the Tea Party left, right, and center now and say, we can't have this Tea Party stuff. The Tea Party is in the toilet in terms of polling. Everybody hates the Tea Party these days. Mm-hmm. And so now you can just attack them. And all these people who were in the Tea Party will now deny they were ever in the Tea Party. And, you can attack it at will. And it can be like communism in Fox News. It's anything you don't like, we are against with you.
And let's finish off the quote from CBS News with after you.
Well, I'll read it. The state polls weren't oversampling Democrats and undersampling Republicans. There just weren't as many Republicans this time because they were calling themselves independents.
Right.
We've been saying this for a year.
If I may quote Dr. Julian Hibbard or Julius Hibbard from The Simpsons, second Simpson reference today, hillbillies want people to call them sons of the soil, but never going to happen. Republicans can call themselves whatever the fuck they want, but they're fucking Republicans. And the more they hide from their past, the more they hide from the Bush administration, all the failure they voted for and applauded, the more they hide from their record on the Iraq War, the more they cower in fear from their contempt for deficits when Bush was running them up, the more you know they're weaklings and cowards because they don't have the balls to come out and be who they are and say what they mean and stand by their record. And people who don't do that electorally, who won't say, yeah, I voted for Bush twice, voted for Romney. People who hide behind independence are really kind of fucking gutless.
Yep.
And that's fine.
Drift Class, first they say we weren't conservative enough.
Right.
Then they say the liberal media cost us this election.
Yeah. Well, this puts me in mind just briefly of a radio show that we're never going to get invited back on because I had bad manners, where the caller identified himself as a conservative libertarian.
Yeah, and an independent.
And
he kept changing the topic, the title that he was going to adopt for himself.
Yeah.
I kept asking him, but what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Where do you stand on these issues? And you were rude. I finally kicked him off the show.
Yeah.
He was a caller. Yeah. And I finally said, well, where do you stand on tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires? And he said, I don't care about tax policy.
Right. Right. All I care about is abortion.
All I care about is throwing bombs to make liberals mad because I'm a conservative.
I'm a conservative. I'm a hiding behind. I don't think we're
independent libertarian. Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm a fucking coward. And what was funny, we really kind of beat the crap out of this poor guy. But first of all, he should never have been on the air. These people should stick to calling Rush Limbaugh and having him, give them
jobs. Yeah.
Because I'm sorry, there's not enough conservative bandwidth or airtime out there in the world to devote any time to callers who are this fucking stupid, who call up just to troll. I know it's good for ratings. I know it's fun to pretend to debate them on the air. These people are never going to change their mind. They're WMDs. They're political, ideological WMDs. They wait there and blow up, and then they scamper off to their little friends and go, ah, we got them. Made that liberal look stupid, didn't I? Sorry, dude. No, you didn't. Because when it got to be abortion time and you started whipping around Judeo-Christian values – and we pulled out ensoulment.
Yeah.
Well, that's because this guy calls himself one angry Jew.
Yeah.
And we whipped
out. We were talking about Old Testament.
We whipped on Solomon, and he said, "Well, that's that Christian thing. I didn't say I was a Christian.
I didn't say I was a Catholic.
No, yeah, that's
no,
a
dude. This is dude, Judaism.
That's Judaism 101. But I guess you wouldn't know that,
right,
would
right
you? One angry
no,
Jew.
He was not.
No, he was a. I know this guy.
Yeah, we all he's, know this
he,
guy.
He's the angry punk who thinks he knows, who thinks he's smart, who thinks he's clever. And when he looks stupid, when he's made to look stupid, he retreats back to, well, yeah, you can sound smart. You sound smug. Yeah, I'm an elitist. Yes, me, Driftglass, I'm an elitist. I think the smart people should be in charge. You think the stupid people in the funny hats should be in charge because the Koch brothers tells you that's a good idea.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah.
Go forth and live in Jesus land. But let's review some of the actual facts of the election now, shall we, Blue Gal?
Well, and that this came up. Someone tweeted about this morning. There's an article in Politico called Romney's Fail Whale. And they had this app called Orca, which was supposed to help them track voters who had not turned out yet, their voters.
Orca being old right-wing crackpot assholes, right?
Okay, good one.
Thank you. That was fat. That's what you get from three cups of coffee. Give me four cups of coffee and I'll recite Shakespeare and Klingon.
Yeah. This app was supposed to replace the kind of paperwork and counting votes and checking and calling and going door-to-door and driving people to the polls and so forth that, frankly, Obama people did.
Yeah.
And I'll just read a couple paragraphs from this Politico article. The system, this is the system that Romney used, was never beta tested, never checked for functionality without going live before Election Day.
Huh?
It went live the morning of Election Day and was never checked for bugs or efficiencies. It was not used for early voters. And so the field workers couldn't and one of the problems was Romney's secrecy. They wanted to this was going to be their secret weapon, so they never rolled it out before Election Day.
If I may have a brief aside here, Blue Gal.
Yeah.
I used to work in this IT shop.
Yeah, I bet you a lot of our listeners used to work
in this
developers, IT shop.
Yeah. And the developers always kept their applications on time and under budget. And they always did that by whenever the money ran out, fuck you, it's done.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It compiled and cleanly, and it compiled cleanly. We put it in production, and then we go on vacation.
Well, and I was going to say, they made damn sure that the check cleared before Election Day for paying for that damn app. You better believe they did, and it was expensive.
Yep.
And the Politico article mentions that it was an expensive thing, but it was going to be their magic super secret weapon, you know. And it was, in other words, it was not the field element. This is from the article. It was not the field element that was the problem. It was the machine that was supposed to be coordinating everything and churning through data to allow the teams to make precision efforts. Instead, as one source said, it was like landing a plane without instruments. And so when you watch Karl Rove the night of the election saying, we keep refreshing the screen, he's looking at CNN numbers. He's looking at, they went to look at news media release, which is like, you know, third party information to find out where the votes were. And they were not finding out by street address where the votes were. They were simply finding out by state where the votes were, which does not help you.
And you can land a plane without instruments, but landing a brand new plane that's never been test flown before.
You don't want to be
in the dark,
plane.
In the fog.
And you're in that plane and your
in
whole
combat.
Family is in that plane. Yeah. That's bad.
Well, you know, and what I hear you saying, Blue Gal, is that if I understand correctly, this app was probably developed by the private sector. And I think what you're saying is the private sector failed Mitt Romney at the critical moment when he really needed them the most. He probably spent a lot of money on it, as job creators will. But, you know, he didn't really check for the quality, because when you're a vulture capitalist, fuck quality. Just throw money at it and fire whoever gets in your way. And I'm sure.
And it's really interesting to me. The last sentence of this article is Romney spokespeople didn't respond to an email for comment.
Yes.
And I got an email from one of my many groups of people that email me all day long saying Romney, the day after the election, turned off all the credit cards for the team.
Yep.
Just
yep.
Boom, you're done. Goodbye.
Well, and so I'm sure
there probably is no email account for the Romney spokespeople anymore. You know, it's
I'm sure
really
they're going to find some 22-year-old coder who was hacking code 12 hours a day for minimum wage, and they'll throw him under the bus and blame it on him, because that's how private sector.
If they have to, which they won't have to. I mean, it's over, so they probably won't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is the quintessential way this election was run, is we will throw money at this problem. We will solve this problem by having secrecy.
Yep.
Versus the get out the vote team that Obama had. And those are young people working their asses off door to door, finding out who these people are, building relationships since 2008 and before 2008. So they know they can call Sheila, they can call Sandy, they can call Harry say, hey, did you vote yet? You did? Okay, can you come down and make a few phone calls for me? Sure. And so
tracking those numbers honestly.
Yep.
You know, without passion, the passion is all reserved for the policy and the candidate.
Yep.
But you don't let passion interfere with what the numbers say. Mm-hmm. And I think Lawrence O'Donnell had a list of the sort of the quintiles of polls.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the most accurate polls were PPP and Daily Kos.
Yep. And those are people that are actually going out and looking at who is this
and way down the list, you find Rasmussen and the Fox News crap, and you find the AP at the very, very, very bottom. And
I don't want to accuse anybody of cooking the books, Driftglass.
No.
but I want you all to know Rasmussen is going on a cruise.
Yeah.
In about 3 days.
Yeah, we should go on that.
We should go on that Republican cruise.
We should go on an emergency fundraiser, crash fundraiser. Put me on a boat with a bunch of Republicans after the election. Hey, guys, the drinks are on me. No, seriously, come on over here.
We have children activities all weekend long. We are so backed up with all the things the kids want to do. So that's fine. Our little Romney voter needs to go Girls on the Run tomorrow morning. So.
Yeah. No, Peggy Noonan. Have another drink. And just to get the microphone at the table, tell me what you really
think. Listen to your
gut.
I want to get into some of the hate speech that's been going on this week on the right, you know, in reaction. And I do, like my daughter, have some sympathy for some of the people out there who are just sad about the election results because they worked hard and believed. And, you know, there but for the grace of God go us. I will say that. Uh-huh. And particularly, you were asking me last night when Rachel Maddow had – we're recording this Friday morning. Thursday night, Rachel Maddow had a segment on about women voters.
Yeah.
And you said, I really want to interview those women voters who voted Republican.
Yeah.
Voted for Murdoch, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, those are the pro-life candidates. But also, I was noticing – I wasn't going to bring this up, but I will anyway – I was noticing the pictures of the Romney celebration in Boston.
Yeah.
And the women there. They were all dressed by the millionaire matchmaker. Every woman in that room had straight long hair and a cocktail dress and high heels on.
Mm-hmm. So look in the land of man, blue gals, what you're saying. Right?
that's exactly what I'm saying. And there's a lot of that. I've noticed that a lot on Facebook, that the right-wing women on Facebook are husband hunting. And I'm not accusing all of them of that, but there's a lot of that going on.
Is Karl Rove still available, or is he taken?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Who knows? I think he's on the – I think he was divorced in the last few years. So he's
–
maybe he's out there.
And Melman can't – well,
no,
can't go Melman.
No, can't go there.
It's hard to know. It's hard to be a right-wing lady and look for the right-wing man. But I'm not going to mock anyone for looking
Aaron
for
Schock
truth.
Aaron Schock is still single.
Yes, he's very, very fussy and he's very neat and very very well-dressed.
We're talking about another congressman from Southern Illinois.
Yes.
Aaron Schock. Just go Google Aaron Schock white belt.
Yeah, perfectly nice man. Perfectly nice
Republican – man.
I'm sorry, Blue Gal, but I'm not going to mock anybody. I don't care where you are on the political spectrum for looking for true love, looking for companionship. I found my true love through the internet.
You did.
And so I'm happier now than I'm poorer now than I've ever been, but I'm happier now than I've ever been. And those are not correlated in any way.
No.
It's just that one thing does not have anything to do with
it
the other.
It is not because I am spending all of your money at Tiffany's.
No. I found some more on the sofa last night, by the way.
Oh,
so,
good. Maybe we can pay our electric bill. That'd be good. Yay.
Or as Homer Simpson would say, we're going for drive-through and doing it twice.
So, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. But I did want to talk about Megyn Kelly.
Megyn Kelly? Oh, yes. She's a delight, really.
She's a delight. She's a delight.
Somewhere along the line, she did not listen to her mommy who warned her that her face would freeze that way.
With her mouth open.
Just
gloss.
Looking like she has bitten into a overripe persimmon stuffed with squirrel shit. Just
it's really something.
And they go to a school. They go to some sort of wingnut charm school to learn how to make that.
To talk with their mouth open.
Make that unhappy face every time they have to use the word Obama or liberal.
Or Democrat, yeah. Megyn Kelly and Tucker Carlson have exactly the same facial expression, if you've ever noticed that. And maybe she was in a state of shock. I'm sure a lot of people on Fox News were. But Megyn Kelly's first words, I went and transcribed them this morning. After Obama won, this is what she said.
It's very monastic of you, by the way. So.
Oh, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Working hard on paper, you know. Uh-huh. That's what we were told early on in the game, which was the mission on the president's team would be to, quote, kill Mitt Romney. Now.
And we'll go on.
And to attack his character and to make people believe that he didn't care about them, that he was a corporate raider, a vampire, a vulture capitalist.
So, in other words.
Yeah.
Megyn Kelly is mad that the Democrats, in a small way, ran a watered-down version of Newt Gingrich and Rick Perry's ads against Romney during the primary.
Exactly.
When she never had a problem with it when it was Republican on Republican sex. You know, never had a problem with it then. It was just good fun. We're just having a good time here. You know, don't destroy the party, but hey, let's have a good time. And back when Fox hated Mitt Romney.
Yep.
And it was never a problem when Fox News employee number 7, Newt Gingrich, was kicking Romney in the balls and calling him a liar.
And calling him a liar and a vulture capitalist, absolutely. And demanding his tax returns, yes. Mm-hmm.
When the Obama people simply took the facts that the opposition research people from Kennedy and Gingrich and everybody else had access to and made ads out of the facts.
Yep.
It became this horribly egregious,
It became time to pull out the assassination word.
Hater.
Kill Mitt Romney. Yeah. No one in the Obama camp said we're going to kill Mitt Romney.
No.
That's just bullshit.
Well, this is what 4-year-olds do. They grab a word that is floating around without context, and they start repeating it over and over and over again. And that's who these people are. They're emotional children, and they will never grow up until someone cracks open the biodome where they live and firebombs it, figuratively, and drags them out into the sunshine and makes them face reality.
Yeah.
I mean, really, at some point in time, their fortress is going to collapse. And with enough force that although the people at the very, very back, at the very, very top, deep in the vaults, the billionaires will never be affected by any of this. They're going to be rich and their grandchildren will be rich forever.
Yeah, and Romney is going to cry on his big pile of money.
Yeah.
And, you know,
some point, and this is what you see happening over the course of the last 6 or 7 years, all the outer rings of the intellectual defenders, the economic defenders, the people who are the smart people, the people who are the ones you send to the talk shows, the ones you send into liberal camps, the ones you send on debates and public affairs shows to debate policy, they're the ones who are slowly being abandoned by or are abandoning the right and just saying they're fucking crazy. If Andrew Sullivan has left the party, David Frum, once they cut him off from wingnut welfare, left the party. And the minute they leave the party and start talking about shit that liberals have been saying for 30 fucking years, that's when suddenly they're airbrushed out of the picture. They were never there. They were never real conservative. They were never part of the party. And the ring keeps constricting and constricting and constricting. And there's no mechanism. This is where the people who say the GOP must do this, they must grow up, they must learn something. No, they mustn't. Because there is no feedback mechanism still available to the Republican Party that will allow that to happen. Because anytime anybody voices any criticism of anything, they are excommunicated by the billionaires and the wingnuts and the Limbaughs who run the party because they're in it for the money. And Rush Limbaugh could not survive in a truly bipartisan world. He has to have a cadre of millions of hateful idiots to make sure he gets paid every week. And so that's never going to happen. Now, as a liberal, I strongly urge conservatives to learn absolutely nothing from this election, other than they need to learn to stuff their shitty ideas into a tortilla shell and reach out to Hispanics.
And sell it. Yeah.
And sell
yeah.
it. Yeah. Yeah. Because yeah. your shitty idea, the problem, and you've said this many times, Lou Gal.
Yep.
And the problem with the GOP.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, this is what I want everyone to take to the bar with them and the coffee shop and the church and so forth, is that the reason Mitt Romney lost this election is because his ideas are really bad.
They are.
Turning Medicare into a voucher plan is a terrible idea. Mm-hmm. Cutting taxes for millionaires and billionaires again and cutting food programs for children is just a dumb idea. It's stupid. And calling women sluts
yeah.
and deciding that a rape victim should be forced to have their rapist baby for Jesus is just a stupid idea.
Yeah. I disagree with the way you phrased your pro-rape comments, but it's not really a deal breaker with me. You know, that's a really, really bad idea.
And you're going, you know, I just mentioned earlier in this podcast about the excuses of being, oh, he wasn't a real conservative. Oh, he didn't really want the presidency. Oh, he didn't want to win. We didn't want to win hard enough. The liberal media cost us this election. No, the reason the Republican Party lost en masse in the Senate, and the reason they won in the House was gerrymandering. The reason they lost the Senate and the presidency is because their ideas are stupid. And
yeah,
give them those vicious, three ideas.
Yeah, well, vicious and
push
mean.
Back on that, people. Push back on that. They had bad ideas.
Self-deportation. Well, their ideas are vicious and mean and bad and dickish.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. And our 14-year-old son, uh-huh. who he was not going to vote for Romney because of the self-deportation thing. And he actually said to us, do you remember we were sitting there eating hamburgers or something? And he said, we have this thing called liberty. Hello? And middle child, all three children are going to be represented on this podcast today.
Yes.
We've mentioned the compassionate vote for Romney from the youngest. The middle child had to write an essay as to why she voted for Obama. Mm-hmm. And I just love this sentence she wrote. She said, Obama wants people who are not American citizens to have a chance to become one.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, because he hates America.
And Romney didn't. Romney doesn't want anyone in this country who's not an American citizen to have a chance to become one.
And if let me take it aside just for a second. This is why the centrists will never learn until they are destroyed, until they are just pushed off the air by a mob. And this is why the Republican Party will never learn. Because, and this is key, and this is why we do this podcast. Part of the reason anyway, there is no venue in which to hold debates anymore.
Yeah.
If you are a centrist, and I have read many a centrist, David Brooks just wrote an entire column yesterday in which Barack Obama was never mentioned at all.
Wow.
He simply advises the Republican Party to become a party that both values hard work and understands the government can help people. And it's important the government is there and vital and helps people out. You know,
but David Brooks, there's this magic app that will fix all the problems. We don't need to work hard.
But he's advising them to become the Democratic Party.
Yes, exactly.
And but he can't admit that because, you know, the minute he does, he's out of a job. Andrew Sullivan is saying, oh, these pundits who are crazy and extremist and they're full of shit and never get anything right, they should really resign or be fired.
Yeah.
People who, like, dude, you have spent most of your career being horribly, horribly wrong about shit. And it's like, yeah, but let's grandfather me in.
Yes.
Now
exactly.
I like gay marriage. And I'm not ever going to acknowledge liberals are right. But now I'm on the right side of pot and gay marriage. I like Obama. So I sort of get a pass on the rule I want everyone else to follow. But the reason that we're never going to be able to move this thing forward the way we would want to is because I have read three or four centrist columns today about how both sides lie and both sides cheat and both sides really. And really the problem is all of us, the American people, and we blah, 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 blah. The problem is, you or I or our 14-year-old or any of the children in this house could knock that argument down in about 3 minutes. in any venue.
Yeah.
Everybody from George Will to Cokie Roberts to David Brooks would be incinerated during a 4-minute debate with anyone with any command of the facts at all, which is why people who have command of the facts are kept the fuck away from the public square. They're not allowed on television. They're not allowed in the debate. So there's no mechanism to create reform because there's no one who's allowed to stand toe-to-toe with Rush Limbaugh.
Yep.
Or with Sean Hannity, or with Bill O'Reilly, or with Cokie Roberts, and debate them on the facts.
Yeah.
There is absolutely no place where a liberal can go and stand toe-to-toe with Newt Gingrich and call him out on every racist, bomb-throwing bullshit thing he's done for the last 20 years and make him pay a price. That debate is not permitted because it's very bad for ratings, and it will result in the job loss of half the press corps. So I'd love to see this election result in that kind of reform, that kind of robust discussion. But that robust discussion is terribly dangerous to the people who now occupy the highest places in the American pundit and journalist class, which is why it'll never be allowed.
Yep.
So that's why you need us.
That's why you need us.
You need us. You know you want
we
it.
We need you too. And we have a letter from one of our listeners. By the way, you are running out of time.
Yes.
To be included in our Thanksgiving show. We're going to have a letter show where we read your letters on the air. If you would like to be considered for that, we have a stack here we're working through. If you would like to have something to say, if you have something to say, a question to ask, whatever, write to us. You can write to us at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791, or send an email to proleftpodcast@gmail.com. That goes to both of us, and we love hearing from you. We won't be able to get to every letter, but if you would like to be considered for that show, please write us.
And we don't need to tell our listeners to support the victims of Hurricane Sandy.
No.
I mean, that's sort of like
that. We all did
that. We assume you all know that.
Yeah,
so let us move forward with the election.
We did that, and we appreciate your support to us. And we also gave this week to Hurricane Sandy victims, and we're still thinking about you. There's a lot of people. I saw someone had mentioned on Facebook that in New Jersey, it was so cold in their apartment that their dishwasher soap froze.
Yeah.
That's bad. And and we are just, our hearts are with you. We got a letter from Sid, and it's a short letter we wanted to read and consider. And this goes back to the chop wood, carry water comment where we move forward from our election celebration. Sid writes, I realize we are all on an election high, but on your next podcast, can you explain the issues of the fiscal cliff and why it's a bad thing? Not sure I quite understand what is going on there. Thanks, Sid. Well, thank you, Sid. That's a good question, because it is the next big thing that's going to happen.
The first thing you need to know, Cliff, is we're not talking about me during the 80s when my radio name was Fiscal Cliff. So
you were playing a lot of what? Spandau Ballet on the on
no
the
good god you know, go away. I was playing classic Floyd and Bowie.
And Rush. Yeah.
Up and thrown in for, you know, when I have to take a bathroom break. This is Fiscal Cliff with Economic Catastrophe on the 12s.
Brother.
Yeah.
You missed your calling. You really did.
Didn't I? And many, many, many times I've missed many callings, honey. So don't you worry about that. I would have made a fine priest at some point.
There's three things about the fiscal cliff just in terms of what it is. And then there's one more thing that I want to add that I think is critical. The first thing is, on January 1st, the Bush tax cuts for everybody will expire, which means that even taxes on the lowest tax bracket will go up. And, you know, that for even for progressives, that is a problem. But most progressives that I've talked to are more than willing to bite that apple in order to increase taxes for the top marginal tax rates.
And they will go up
January 1st.
They were when Bill Clinton was president.
When Bill Clinton was president. So this was put off for 2 years when the Republican Party lost its mind over it, and Fox News put a clock on the bottom of their screen saying, time until the largest tax increase in history, which is total bullshit, because the tax cuts were so huge under Bush that it's they have to just go back to what they were before. Yes, it's the biggest tax increase in history because it was the biggest tax cut in history.
And there's two things to know about that particular thing. The first is under Eisenhower, top marginal tax rates were in the 90s. Under Kennedy, which is who Republicans always cite as well, he cut taxes and closed loopholes and broadened the base and blah, blah. Yeah, he cut them from 90 to the 70s.
Yep.
Okay, under
Clinton. And he did close loopholes to make up for that revenue, by the way.
And he closed loopholes specifically because, this is really important, specifically because he said people like him, rich people like him, were getting away with murder.
Right.
Were getting away with paying nothing. And the reason you had to close those loopholes is because rich people were taking advantage of them. Rich people weren't paying their fair share.
They were engaging in tax avoidance. Where have we heard that before?
And the Clinton tax rates were in the mid-30s. Mm-hmm. Okay? So it was half of what – so apparently, you know, Kennedy was a socialist.
Yep.
Eisenhower was a communist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we're fighting over a 3% change. The second thing is the reason the Bush tax cuts only lasted 10 years is because when they were proposed, the Republicans refused to pay for them.
Yep.
They have this fantasy that tax cuts are always neutral. They never cost anything, which is bullshit. They blow the deficit way up. So the Bush tax cuts burned through the Clinton surplus and started racking up huge deficits. And the reason they were sunset after 10 years is because it's a Senate where you cannot have a tax cut forever that isn't paid for. And since Republicans refused to pay for their tax cuts for billionaires, there's this time limit that after 10 years you have to this shuts down automatically because you will have created this huge deficit. Well, after 10 years, it did. The problem was after 10 years, we were also in the Bush recession.
Yep.
And the way you get out of a recession generally is you do deficit spending. Well, we'd already spent all that money in the economy that we would have spent getting us out of a recession. We spent it on Iraq. We spent it on tax cuts and other things.
And Afghanistan,
if the Republicans wanted. So they had already spent us broke and more than broke and burned through the Clinton surplus. And then the tax cut timed out. And rather than have this big shock to the economy, and because Republicans held the economic health of the country hostage, Barack Obama agreed to a temporary extension of 2 years. And that's where that –
And he promised at the time he would not do it again. He promised at the time he would not do it again. Remember that.
Yeah. So that's component number one.
That's component number one. Component number two is called sequestration.
Yes, which is a
Congress
horse –
Congress not doing its job.
That's horse
what
dancing,
it is.
Right? That's
no,
horse
it's
dancing.
Not
that's
horse
what
dancing.
Rafalka did, right? Tap dancing around the
cuts, equal cuts to social programs and defense programs. And it has been hilarious, if it wasn't so serious, to watch people like John McCain say, well, we're not going to have these defense cuts. We'll just unvote them. But nothing about the social program cuts. Sequestration is going to have a devastating impact on the economy because cutting defense that dramatically that quickly, it's like a 40% cut. It's huge.
Yeah.
Cutting it that quickly is really a shock to the system that we can't handle. But Chris Hayes last night on Lawrence O'Donnell said, you know, this isn't a cliff. And this is the important thing to remember. It's not – they're making it this dramatic to try to scare people. But actually, Congress can fix this retroactively. They can do all kinds of things to make this not the cliff. It's actually a slope.
And let's also – a little background on sequestration.
Yeah.
Sequestration was set up predominantly by congressional Republicans as a doomsday weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Surely you would not allow – the military to be slashed, you know, by 40%, by social programs to be devastated. So we're going to create this atom bomb, and we're going to put it under the Congress, and we're going to put a timer on it. And it was another way of sort of holding the economy hostage. Surely you
won't
let these
things happen. Until after the election.
Yeah.
Exactly after the election that this would come to.
And once Mitt Romney's president, and once, you know, we take control of the Senate, then we can turn the bomb off by cutting all the social programs in the world and increasing military spending, and somehow that won't cause the deficit.
No, I don't think that's what would happen. If Romney had won the election and they had the Senate, they would take the Dick Cheney pill of, deficits don't matter.
That's right.
We can just turn all this off and keep spending and keep borrowing, and no one on Fox News would ever mention the deficit again.
And the Tea Party would go back to having, you know, R's on their cars as Republicans.
Yeah. and sucking their thumbs. So,
but the point was, this was a doomsday weapon created by congressional Republicans in order to blackmail the Congress and the president into doing what they wanted them to do. Mm-hmm. So when you hear them say, well, Barack Obama wants to cut the military, the Barack Obama wants to have these devastating cuts, what they're saying is Barack Obama is going to let us shoot the hostage. How irresponsible of him to do that.
And he's calling our bluff. And oh my God, he's such a bad person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, to these two things about the fiscal cliff, I would definitely add the debt ceiling fight, which is coming up in the spring. And I think Obama is an idiot if he doesn't include this in the negotiations now and draw a line on the cement that says you will not turn this debt ceiling into a hostage-taking situation again. You're
going to
approve an increase in the debt ceiling now, or we're not. There's no deal.
Yeah.
And this debt ceiling thing, first of all, debt ceiling thing needs to go away because no other country in the world has it. It's simply a bullshit tool for the Republicans to say we care about deficit spending when a Democrat is in office.
Well, to be fair, it was a symbolic thing for a long time. Barack Obama
voted against it too. Yes,
voted against it when it was safe to do so. You know, this is a case where you understand how politics works.
Yep.
It's where you go, look, we need X number of votes to pass this thing, because if we don't pass it, we're doomed. So we have this many votes, and now we're going to give you guys can give speeches against it and you know, for your constituents, for the sake of the congressional record and your television ads, give these principled speeches against it, because now we have enough votes to avoid anything bad happening. So it's a show. It's just a show.
But the House Republicans didn't take it as a show.
Right.
And they said, we can't increase the debt ceiling, and we don't care if the economy crashes over
And
it.
The person who called this first, bless his heart, was Lawrence O'Donnell.
Yeah.
Why? Because he wrote a script about it for West Wing back in the 90s, which explained the debt ceiling. What's the debt ceiling? Well, it's the most ridiculous thing you can imagine. It's also Armageddon. And Republicans found the trigger on this thing. Said, wait a minute. I mean, if we pull this trigger, we can destroy the government? Cool. Mm-hmm. Let's do that. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. This should be part of the negotiation. This should be put off limits forever.
And
you can never, ever do this.
Here's the thing that just came across my inbox as we've been recording the podcast.
Wow.
Nicole Bell over at Crooks and Liars sent out an email from a group. I'm not even going to name the group. But there's a group that sends out these flash emails about, you know, we have to do something about so and such and such. And the point about the fiscal cliff is that this is an opportunity for right-wingers and centrists to say both sides.
Exactly.
Both sides need to compromise.
Exactly.
Both sides are equally wrong. Mm-hmm. And this email that she forwarded and said, I hate these people.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The president and the Congress, both parties, both sides share the blame. Both sides are fiscally irresponsible. Both sides this and that. Bullshit. This is a Republican Congress problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And just as a point of historical fact, remember, again, I'm probably repeating myself. I'm sure I'm repeating myself. But people like David Brooks loved Barack Obama just as long as Barack Obama promised to vote straight Republican Party ticket.
Exactly. And Fox News,
and even
Steve Doocy, you know, let's hope that now that Barack Obama has won the White House in a landslide, he's willing to be more compromising.
Yeah. And that's that. But that's what happens when you deal with fanatics.
Yeah.
They absolutely don't accept the fact that anyone should have any opinion or any economic policy but theirs. Mm-hmm. Therefore, when you win, you are given a mandate to agree with them.
Mm-hmm.
And anything short of that is treason, or the election was rigged, or he's from Kenya, or he has death panels. They cannot function in a democracy anymore. They are a party of crazy people. And even their intellectual elite, people like David Brooks, was perfectly happy to be delighted with Barack Obama as long as he basically promised to give Republicans everything they wanted. The minute he said, look, fuck you people. I've given and given and given as much as I'm going to give. That's it. You guys have to fucking grow up and deal with me like an adult. That's the day that David Brooks wrote a tearful column about what a chump he'd been.
Yes.
Barack Obama said he was all compromisey and postpartisan, but now he's just another hack politician. I don't like it anymore. Hey, Mitt Romney, he's shiny. I kind of like him. And And that's the life cycle of a David Brooks thought.
Absolutely.
It's as long as you're willing to agree with me 100% on everything, then I'm happy to support you. And that's the problem with them, is that they believe that compromise means give me everything I want and I won't kill you. Well, no, that's a terrorist act. Yes. That's hostage taking. Compromise is when you actually give something up that you value and you deal with other grown-ups to reach a mutually agreeable position where everybody takes a hit, everybody has some pain, and everybody agrees, here is the big problem we need to solve. Let's all figure out a way we can solve it and go sell this bullshit to our constituents because everybody has to take a hit.
We are at about an hour, Drift Glass.
Yes, and there are a few quotes I do want to read.
You do want to read a couple
I'll read
quotes.
One. I'll read one.
At least one. Yeah, yeah.
Because
about tax increases.
The horrors of tax increases. It's a pop quiz, and I won't give the spoiler, but I want to read this first quote that says from a prominent Republican who you all know. We have all too many people in the Democratic administration who are talking about bigger government, bigger bureaucracy, more programs, and higher taxes. I believe that that will, in fact, kill the current recovery and put us back in a recession. It might take one and a half or 2 years, but it will happen. And I think I'll just leave it at that,
yeah,
since we're at an hour.
That's a good quote. Now, tell us who that is.
Which Republican candidate or prominent Republican is that from? Well, that's from a guy named Newton Leroy, I'm sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly, Gingrich, who was a representative from Georgia. And the year is 1993, February 2nd, 1993. And you can go right down the list of congressional Republicans.
Telling you that these tax increases are going to kill jobs and cause a recession.
By God. And these are the Clinton tax increases that Barack Obama is simply proposing we go back to. Every Republican was against this. It had to be voted through on a tiebreaker by Al Gore. I think he had to cast the deciding vote. Every Republican said, oh, these tax increases will destroy America. It will halt the recession. It will kill us all.
Instead, we got a surplus and a boom.
And a boom. So you know what? Again, this is the party of always wrong, but never in doubt. And I guarantee you, when the Sunday shows trot Newt Gingrich out, and when we start talking about tax increases, and when we start talking about the fiscal cliff,
he's going to call it a job killer. Absolutely.
Not a single fucking person. Not David Gregory, not George Snuffleupagus, nobody.
Say, you said this in 1993, and you were wrong. We've tried this. We've tried your way. And you're full of
not
shit.
Not a soul will pull these quotes out and read them and say, but you were wrong.
Yeah.
You were completely wrong about that, weren't you, Newt? Oh, my God. No one's going to do that because Newt's in the club and we are not. And it's just that fucking simple. And Newt has Sheldon Adelson money and we don't. And it's pretty much that simple.
It really is. We are so grateful to you. Every week we post a picture of an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week our internet kitty is named Snuggles. We had a long run of torties over the summer, and so we took a tortie break. But Snuggles is back and she's a tortie. Snuggles' owner was in the hospital, and one of our listeners was taking care of Snuggles, sent in a lovely picture of her, and we hope all's well with Snuggles' owner, and we're very glad to have Snuggles as this week's internet kitty. A reminder again to send us letters. You can send them to proleftpodcast@gmail.com or to our P.O. Box, P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. We love hearing from you. Feel free to write us for our Thanksgiving letter show or for any other reason. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you say otherwise. So, Drift Glass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, the internet kitties admit that, in honor of Seamus the dog, they pity voted for Mitt Romney.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2012, Drift Glass Blue Gal Podcast.